You're listening to Chaos on the Set, a chaotic TV and film review podcast. And today, the three hosts that started this podcast are reunited for the first time in what seems like months.
Wow.
I'm Shruti.
I'm Mike.
I'm Kate. It's been a bit, huh?
We've missed Kate for a while because we've been covering Lost and Oscars, two things that Kate has no interest in, although I maintain Lost.
Wait a second. Who said I don't like the Oscars?
Okay, can you name the 10 movies that are nominated for Best Picture?
Okay.
I think you can get easily five.
Barbie.
Got it.
Oppenheimer. Got it. Past Lives. Mm-hmm. Wait, give me a second. The Holdovers. Mm-hmm. American Fiction.
Yes. Two international movies.
May-December.
No.
May-December didn't get Best Picture.
Should have.
Give me, just guys, just like, hold on.
No, we believe in her. We believe in her.
Isn't there some movie like The Triangle of Sadness or something?
That was last year. Well, you know what? You got five and...
No. I want to get six because she said I could only get five.
Martin Scorsese.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, Killers of the Flower Moon.
There you go.
Yay!
Thank you.
So, I stand corrected. Kate cares a great deal about the Oscars. It's also, her number one passion project.
There's no way Kate would like Lost.
Listen.
What? You really don't think so?
I don't think she could... You think she could stomach some of the things that happened in that show?
I didn't like the pilot.
The pilot is, like, a lot. There's less gore later.
Yeah, there's,
like,
still...
The plane crash is probably the goriest thing that happened.
Yeah, there's still a lot of, like, fucked up shit that goes on. Like, dude, could she watch a majority of the episodes? Yeah, probably. But you would have to be, like, very diligent about telling her, like, when she needs to shield herself.
I've read so much about this show, I know like everything that happens.
Okay, well, Mike does not, yeah. So let's
Zivalid.
I just got so nervous.
Michael, did you know that?
Let's talk about Sideways today. We can probably cut out a lot of this, but
no, it was fun.
Today we're covering the 2004 movie Sideways in honor of Alexander Payne's return to the Oscars for The Holdovers. So we might touch on The Holdovers later. I forced Kate to watch it yesterday. She liked it a lot.
Yay.
Contrary to how she felt about Sideways, I think we should just start the bat off. Kate, what did you feel about this movie?
Well, I think that the two main characters are pieces of shit. And, like, everything turns out fine for them in the end. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, you cheated on your wife, but you still get to get married to her in the end. And Miles not telling Jack's wife that he went and cheated on her is he's a bad person for that. And I think they're both bad men. And I understand people say, oh, this film is very human, because it is. There are lots of men who cheat on their... fiancés, girlfriends, wives, there's women who cheat on their boyfriends. Like, cheating happens all the time, and I hate it. So it is a human movie for highlighting on that. But it just annoyed. I was just annoyed all movie. Like, I couldn't appreciate the art of the movie because the whole time I was like, these two guys suck. And that's all I could think the whole time. I think how much I hated them overweighed my enjoyment of the movie. And it overweighed, like, me appreciating the film for, like, the things it did right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's valid. I, you know, work in development, and every time we have an unlikable character, our execs are like, is this character too unlikable, though? Is anyone going to be able to root for them? So I can understand.
But I give respect to Alexander Payne for being daring enough to make movies about absolutely vile people. Because I do think a lot of studios shy away from that, yeah, and are like, we want, like, Captain America can do no wrong, you know? And then, like, these guys are just awful.
Sideways and Captain America the Winter Soldier are basically the same movie. Mike, what'd you think?
I liked it. I thought it was funny.
It was your first time watching it, too, right?
Yes, it was my first time.
So it was all of our first times.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, and I haven't seen, you know, all of his films, but I would say to this point, it's definitely my least favorite Alexander Payne film.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, I think the Holdovers is way better.
Yeah.
And I would probably say I think Election is his best.
Oh, I love Election.
Election is
okay.
Amazing. Had I seen Downsizing, I would maybe say that's his worst film. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
His worst or his best?
his worst. I don't know. I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say
that. I haven't seen Downsizing, but my biggest fear is, like, size dysmorphia, so I will never see Downsizing.
This is, but, like, Downsizing wasn't, like, really critically acclaimed, was it?
No, Downsizing actually was pretty panned, I would say.
Up until this point, Sideways is my least favorite, but I still liked it. I thought it was pretty funny at points, and I think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying, Kate. I found it to be more of an interesting dynamic in terms of, you know, how their stories were playing off of each other. And I will say, though, I think it is very befitting of its era, right? Not only with just, mm-hmm. like, how the movie looks and their sets and all of that. I was like, holy shit, this is, like, so 2000s, if not 1990s. But just, like, the idea of, like, oh, like, Bachelor Weekend, you know, this guy has to go, like, it's his last taste of freedom. He has to go out and cheat. Like, it's just a very, I think, old way of thinking. And we'll get into it more later with the Shade Court, but I was particularly, like, compelled by Miles' character. Like, you could see he was trying to stop it, right?
He didn't try enough.
But I think that's the argument. It's like, to what degree, like, is he responsible for this other guy? And, like, how much could he actually do to stop him? I think there's arguments to be had both ways. But I think that's part of what was interesting about the film. But also just, like, as somebody who's a big fan of wine, like, it was just funny and interesting to see them touring wine country and to, you know, have Jack just, like, slamming it back, every wine in front of him, and Miles, like, you know, having all these tasting notes and spitting it in the bucket and... Because that's what I would be. I would be the snob in that situation.
Do you spit a lot when you
Oh,
taste?
No. I definitely drink it. But there is a bit of snobbiness to me when it comes to wine. Like, I do not understand, like, people who are just like, I don't like red wine. I only like white. And I'm like... Okay, so you don't like wine is what you're telling me. Like, you can't just like one and not the other. Like, if you just like white wine, you really don't like it that much. You just like it for the thought of liking it, to be honest.
Are you ready for my hot take?
Yeah.
I don't like red wine or white wine. I only like rosé.
Oh, God. I mean... So you don't,
I don't like wine.
Yeah,
let's just say
don't
that.
Like wine.
I know. I would if someone.
And
if
you probably only like a very sweet rosé, if I had to guess.
Yeah. Ugh. If someone was like, Kate, here's like.
So you like grape juice.
We have every alcohol. Yeah. If they were like, of every alcohol imaginable for you, like, I wouldn't be taking a rosé. I wouldn't be taking even a wine.
Kate's
I'd be taking
chugging,
like.
Kate's chugging Welch's.
Like a sugary cocktail that has like the
peach Andres
hint, yeah. Oh, the peach
Andre is the bane of my existence.
Peach Andres is so good. I always get it on New Year's. I make my parents drink it.
Do you get hungover?
No, I have like one glass. Okay. That's when I hit my my tummy hurts limit.
Well, on the topic of wine, we did interview a wine expert. Our friend Jack, he's the general manager and wine director at Thatcher's Wine, and he's a huge fan of Sideways. So we really appreciate his time and insight. And if he's listening to it, Jack, please don't be insulted by Kate's opinions on Sideways.
What? It has nothing to do with the wine, Jack. I just think these two guys are pieces of shit. I don't know what else to say.
But I really enjoyed what Jack had to say about wine, his connection to wine, and also Miles' connection to wine. So let's take a listen to that.
I first got into wine by just working in the service industry, working as a server and bartender at restaurants across Los Angeles. I started tasting wine and studying wine and just caught that wine bug. I couldn't stop reading about it and thinking about it and tasting as much as I possibly could to learn more about it. I think the thing that I love about wine the most is bringing people together over wine, whether it's friends at a dinner party or family over the holidays, introducing new wines and new regions to people, telling stories about the wines and the winemakers producing them, It's something I'm still very passionate about to this day. There's a lot of beauty behind wine and a story to tell, and I think that's why wine helps Miles cope with everything he's going through in his life. He's had a lot of really sad things happen to him, but at the end of the day, his passion for wine is always there. Him being able to share that with other people is always there, and it seems to be the only thing that truly makes him happy in life.
I really appreciate what Jack had to say, because Kate and my first experience with Sideways was actually in a screenwriting class where we listened to the scene where where Miles discusses why he likes Pinot so much. It's a tougher grape. It's hard to grow. You really need to understand it. And he's talking about himself. So we watched it in class to talk about how to write subtext.
I have no recollection of this, by the way.
But I think that Jack discussing how, like, this is what Miles is passionate about, and this man who has such an issue connecting with people over anything else, maybe because of his personality, maybe because of things that have happened to him that have made him so closed off, but this is the one thing that he is passionate about and the one thing that he can use to find personal connection, and how so many other people, from Jack, who's, you know, started as a server and got so into wine, also finding connection and bringing people together over wine. And I just thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah. What he's describing there, like, one scene, like, particularly was implanted in my mind as I'm hearing him describe how Miles is using, right, the wine to sort of form the connection. And I just think to when they go out, like, on their quasi double date dinner for the first time, the dichotomy of that situation, where on the one side, Jack is like, so, like, how do you close up the shop? And she's like, I take the trash out and clean up, like, such a stupid ass question. And then on the other side of the table, Miles is going back for, like, his second, third, like, fourth sip of Maya's wine. It's not even his own wine. And they're, like, breaking down, you know, just everything about it. And I think that's a great scene to sort of tell us about who Miles is as a character. And then, like, he referenced also, or as you referenced with your screenwriting class, particularly later when they're back at Sandra Oh's house. And I also love the scene where they talk about the 1961 wine, and she's like, that's opening, that is the occasion of itself.
It might be too late already. What are you waiting for?
Oh, I don't know. Special occasion with the right person. It was supposed to be for my 10th wedding anniversary, but,
You know, the day you open a 61 Cheval Blanc, that's the special occasion.
Right, like, you don't need an occasion to drink the wine.
That's such a good quote.
It really is, and it's like, I love what Jack said about, it's Jack, right? The wine guy is Jack?
No, Paul G. Oh, Jack, our friend. Yes.
Jack,
okay.
But the actor.
Yeah, no, I'm asking your friend. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't.
The guy we interviewed is also named,
okay,
Jack.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Jack. Real life Jack, please do not think we're talking about you when we're insulting character, okay, Jack.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't getting that crossed. But I love what real life Jack had to say about wine being a shared experience, like sharing a bottle of wine, right? And, like, that's how he sort of fell in love with it. Because I feel like, unlike any other alcohol, wine does sort of have that ability, that power. Like, I can think of back of so many distinct memories of that I've had in great nights because I was sharing a bottle of wine with friends or with family, because it's like you're all participating in this communion, not religious communion, but like this communion together. Whereas, like, beers, like, yeah, sure, it's great to throw back some beers, but it's not like we're not drinking the same beers, you know? It's not the same. You know, you pour a glass for somebody else. Oh, there's nothing like it.
Wait, Michael, are you telling me that you don't find the beauty in Miller's Light, which is the champagne of beers?
Kay is quoting the holdovers. I just thought of a very sweet personal memory that I have of every single... Mike made me watch all of the Lord of the Rings, yes, movies with him before I graduated. Aww. And every Lord of the Rings movie, he would bring over a New Zealand Pinot Noir. And the New Zealand Pinot Noir we drank during the Two Towers, I still remember it. It was so good. And you're right, Mike. Like, that is a memory I'll never forget because we shared that bottle of wine together.
I do appreciate what real life Jack said about Oh, like thinking about the people who helped grow the grapes and like helped, you know, make the wine. I think that's really interesting. I just wish I liked the taste of it.
But also like the history of it. I think they touch on this in the movie. Like, I don't think they actually use the word time travel, but that made me, they talk about like the history of who was growing it at the time and like thinking about that aspect of it. And in that sense, wine is kind of a form it's of time history. Travel of like engaging into a specific moment of time and really being contemplative about it. And I think also because wine is meant to be savored, right? You're not supposed to drink like character Jack. You're supposed to drink it like Miles or real life Jack. And so while you savor it, just like how Maya was talking about, like,
and I discovered that I had a really sharp palate. Mm. And the more I drank, the more I liked what it made me think about.
Like what?
Like what a fraud he was.
You know, but things like that, I'm honestly, the more I talk, the more I'm starting to garner more appreciation for like the specificity and nuance of these wine insights.
You know what I always think of too, when I think of wine, because I don't really like it that much, I always think of that plot point in The Parent Trap where they have the bottles of wine from their wedding night.
Yeah.
And remember how like then they don't they like pop it open on their other wedding day, like years in the future?
I don't remember. Oh. Maybe.
He owns, because in Parent Trap, the dad is like owns a winery too, remember?
A vineyard, yeah.
Yeah. When the mom comes back to the vineyard, he takes her down to like the wine cellar and he shows her the wedding wine and she's like, "You still have this?" He's like, "Yeah." And it's just like,
I
was, oh my God,
so bored during that scene.
but like that literally, like, it's fun how through a bottle of wine it shows like that he still loves her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cute.
As a quick sidebar, a lot of times when I watch films, I like to pair my drinks with them when appropriate, right? Like if there's like a strong theme. Like, for instance, if I'm watching The Big Lebowski, I'll pour myself a white Russian to go along with it, because that's what the dude drinks.
What about The Godfather?
Red wine. Or like, okay. If I'm watching an old Western, like I'll pour a whiskey or something, right?
Got it.
I was so looking forward to like cracking open a bottle of wine in watching this film, and like a few days before I sat down to watch it, I bit my lip so bad that I had like this cut and I was like, shit, like I can't drink wine now because it's like, it's gonna be really painful like to get like the acid in this cut. And I was so disappointed. I just wanted to
that is that devastating. I will say this movie made me both really want to have nice wine, but also made me so hungry. They have so many good meals when they like start by going to just Miles's mom's house and she has that piece for them, and then they just go to a diner and I'm like, now I want diner food. And then they go to the restaurant, I'm like, I want that food. Like everything they eat, I'm like, I want that.
Well, genuinely, when we were watching the movie too, me and they looked at each other and we were like, should we take a trip up to wine country someday?
We were literally planning it. We may go to Solvang over President's Day weekend if our
Isn't
friend
that,
has
like,
off.
Literally next week.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Next week is the Super Bowl, Kate.
Oh, that's right.
I think it's time to transition over to Shade Court. I want to start off Shade Court by playing a voice note that we got from Simone, who you may know from our Love and Basketball episode. She was also in town, so she watched Sideways with us. And she was kind of on Kate's side of not really agreeing with how despicable these characters are. I will say, while I was watching the movie, I was also pretty annoyed by them, but I was constantly trying to find a reason to break through it, because everyone I know is obsessed with this movie. So I'm like, okay, what is it about this movie that makes people so excited? Anyway, here is Simone talking about her takeaway of the movie.
I do want to watch movies like this to understand men more. Like, is this how you talk? Is this what you think about? Is this your culture?
And what Simone is really talking about is the fact that Jack needs to get laid this weekend. Character Jack, not real life Jack. because he's about to get married. And like Kate, me, and Simone are all watching this movie and we're like, dude, you don't need to get married. Like, just don't get married if this is really causing you so much stress and you need to get laid this weekend before you... Like,
by like somebody else that's not your fiance.
Exactly. Like... Well, I mean, and then you see at the end of the movie, when he's like breaking down, he's like, I can't lose Christine. I'm nothing without Christine. So he obviously feels some reason to be with this woman. But I was just genuinely, why? Like, Mike, I know you're not a straight man, but can you give the white man's opinion, if not the straight white man's opinion, on why folks are like,
don't look at me. Don't look at me. Yes. I mean, so in this scenario, I think Jack is particularly interesting, on an interesting journey of I don't want to call it self-discovery, but like it clearly is just like not fully committed to it. And it's weird to see how much of a 180 he does, because like he's ready to like call off the wedding, right, and like move in with her. At least that's what he's saying. I don't know if like he's truly devoted to
that.
No,
but I do feel like he does think that.
Yes, and it's Miles who is really pushing back against that, you know, and is like trying to bring reason and you know, you've known her for 24 hours and you're already in love. You know, how is that possible?
But, and part of me was like, well, it is Sandra Oh, so I get it.
Oh, true. My God.
Yeah. But I think more than anything, right, it's just like he is not, you know, he's sort of using that as a blocker to his fear of commitment, perhaps. And so it was interesting when he really like broke down. He's like, and said he's nothing without her. That, for me, that was a little bit unexpected. But in terms of like generalizing here, this idea of, right, like men, they're like bachelor, whatever, you know, having to see other women before they get married. I think it's almost a cultural stereotype that is almost like self-realizing, right? It's like perpetuated. I think in a lot of cases, it's not even the man getting married. I mean, in this case, it is with Jack, right? Like, he's the one pushing it, but it's usually the friends that are more, I think, peer pressuring, that are, you know, like, want to go to a strip club or something like that. So I think it's a bit of a stereotype, but I mean, I can't really say none of my friends have gotten married yet, so I wouldn't know.
I kind of think, like, when I was thinking about the movie and I was trying to get over how much I hated Miles and Jack, I was really thinking about Jack, fictional Jack, not real life Jack. And I was realizing that I think him needing to sleep around before his wedding is because he definitely feels like he's accomplished nothing in life. He, you know, he wanted to be a famous actor. He's doing, you know, voiceover commercial work. And I think he doesn't, like, he brags about it to people. And he's like, oh, you've heard me do, like, these medication commercials. Ha, ha, ha. But I think deep down he's not satisfied with the way that his career has gone. And I think maybe getting married, I think he might feel inside, oh, I need her more than she needs me. And I think that innate fear of feeling like he's latching on too much to her and not the other way around is why he goes and tries to be like unfaithful.
I mean, I don't know about the unfaithful part, but the I need her thing really resonates with me. Like, I think he does realize, like, okay, I'm about to be washed up and I cannot keep doing this. So,
well, and I think he sleeps around with Sandra Oh and then also the waitress because he's like, these women think I'm like hot, like, this is something new and exciting, like, maybe they need me. I think he kind of just wants to feel wanted and needed right before he gets married. I don't know. It's definitely fucked up. I'm not agreeing.
No, but.
And that's a great point about the waitress too, because it's like, even if he believed what he was saying about wanting to leave his fiance for Sandra Oh, it's like the second, you know, Sandra Oh ditches him because she finds out, like, he's ready to move on with the waitress immediately.
I think that's triggered, you know, because she remembers that he was like a little role in One Life to Live, and she's freaking out because I'm sure like she doesn't meet a lot of celebrities, even though they're so close to LA. I'm surprised she hasn't met more celebrities up there, but whatever. And he just takes that and runs with it because he's like, yes, I was on the hit show One Life to Live, which I make fun of that because that was my mom's favorite show before it got canceled. Anyway, so I think that triggered something in him, like, oh, she she's like interested in who I am. Like she, you know, she thinks I'm cool.
All right, so we've interrogated enough about why character Jack does what he does. I do want to get more into Miles, because even though Miles, he even says when he's trying to defend himself to Maya, I'm not Jack. But he is still pretty despicable. I mean, the movie starts with him stealing money from his mom.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, he gets a magazine called Barely Legal Magazine. Like, they're not trying to make this man redeemable. And I guess I was watching the movie after having seen The Holdovers thinking, oh, Paul Giamatti's going to get redeemed. But he doesn't really get redeemed. Something I said to my friend, basically last night, I was really trying to reconcile the white straight men in this movie. So I texted a straight white man and he hadn't seen The Holdover. Sorry, he hadn't seen Sideways. So I had to text another straight white man. This one had seen The Holdover. The Sideways, god damn it. This one had seen Sideways. So it was kind of just like batting ideas back and forth with him because I really could not reconcile rooting for these characters. And I said, I mean, I think it might be because I had seen this movie after seeing The Holdovers, and like The Holdovers is like a redemption arc story. So I was watching Sideways thinking I was watching a redemption arc story when I was really just watching a depression journey, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. So once I realized, oh, this is just a story of a really depressed guy that has had a lot of really shitty things happen in his life, it was easier for me to just watch his arc, but I'm still just like, he's still so rude that it was hard for me to reconcile. So then anyway, I do have this voice note from a female listener who defended Miles. Let's take a listen to this.
I was absolutely rooting for Paul Giamatti in Sideways because he was just such a real person. I feel like I just see so many movies with exciting like storylines and in parts of the movie, but it's just so not real and you don't ever actually really get to know the person. And he was just such a real guy. He had mostly had flaws, which I think most people do. And I wanted him to catch a break because he was just like anyone I could see on the street, you know? I just wanted him to succeed, knew that he wouldn't. And that's just like the rest of us.
Wow, she's so much nicer than me.
I will say, I don't think I was ever actively rooting for Miles, but I was proud of him when he just leaves the wedding and goes back to his place, gets his famous bottle of wine and opens it. Cause I'm like, he's finally doing the work of like distancing himself from the people who do feed on this depression. Like, it's interesting to contrast this with The Holdovers because The Holdovers explicitly tells you what happened in Paul Giamatti's life to make him the way he is. You know, he was kicked out of, oh, you know what? Let me not spoil The Holdovers. But they give you a reason, right? You start The Holdovers being like, this is a really rude, crabby teacher. You get to learn more about him. You get to learn why he treats his students this way and what made him the way he is with like a explicit scene where he explains it to his student. You never get that in Sideways. At the end of Sideways, the best you kind of get is when Maya calls him and leaves this voicemail saying, like, oh, wow, that sister character was such a mess. And, like, did the father even commit suicide at the end? I don't know if that means Paul Giamatti's father committed suicide. I don't know if that means him himself was being suicidal this whole time. But that's really all you get into the insight of what made Paul Giamatti this way. You know he's been divorced and he cheated on his ex-wife or et cetera, et cetera. But you don't really know the specifics of, you know, why is he this depressed?
There is one line that Jack says in the movie that resonated with me where it's something about, like, you know, what was the ex-wife's name? Was it Victoria?
Susan from Friends.
Victoria?
I don't know. I call her Susan from Friends.
Susan from Friends. Jack says something along the lines of, like, she made you feel so small and so awful in the marriage. Like, remember that? Remember how she made you feel? Like, why are you, like, still obsessing over her? And so it did make me stop and think, okay, this is, we see a very one-sided kind of take of their ex, you know, their marriage, but like, what was it really like? I like, because we will never be able to actually see it mm-hmm. in action. We just heard about it as him reminiscing, as someone who missed his ex-wife, you know? So,
but if Paul Giamatti acted the way he still does today with his ex-wife, I'm not surprised that they got divorced.
Yeah. No, I'm not surprised either, but I guess, like, you know, I wonder what, like, if she did stuff that yeah. really made him feel awful, too. You never know.
Mike, were you rooting for him?
Not particularly. I think I was kind of, like, with you. Like, I wasn't, like, rooting for nor against. Like, I was glad to see how, like, it ended with him having the wine in the voicemail, like you said. But no, it's, I wasn't like particularly pulling for him.
Well, it's interesting because I listened to a podcast called The Rewatchables, and it was hosted by Bill Simmons, Chris Ryan, Sean Fennessy, two older white men. And they start the podcast, and like, full disclosure, I don't agree with most of the things Bill Simmons and Sean Fennessy says. So like, obviously I was going into this podcast ready to fight. But
Sean Fennessy annoys me to no end.
Thank you!
Like,
God, on, he pisses me off so much.
Not specific to this either, just like in general.
His Oscar takes. And listen, this is nothing. This is nothing against him personally. It's his takes. Like, I'm sure he's a fine
man. He started saying some shit about Lord of the Rings, and he was done from that day on.
The podcast though starts with them saying like, "Oh, this movie is about a guy that like can't seem to get his shit together, so down on his luck, but like you're still rooting for him." And I was like, are you though? Like, maybe these three white guys are rooting for him. And I think that, you know, when we talk about movies from decades ago, we kind of just have to put into perspective, like, this is coming from the old white guy's perspective, and like, what are they trying to say? And what Alexander Payne is trying to say is still not isolated to an old white guy, right? About like this down on his luck actor, this writer who wants to be an author and can't seem to get published. They think they have something to impart on the world, but they're at this age where they're like, do I have anything left to give to the world? I don't know. Like, that's all a relatable feeling. That's not just an old white guy feeling, I don't think. But The fact that they're still rooting for him made me think like, oh, do people watch this movie rooting for Miles, or do they watch this movie just being like, oh, Miles?
I tend to, like, if the person is not a good person in the beginning, I do tend to root for a redemption arc. I think that's just the Avatar in me, like, you know, Zuko, you know, that the OG redemption arc, not the OG, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think when I really lost all hope was like, okay, he didn't tell Maya that, you know, Jack was getting married. Like, okay, fine.
He does tell
But
her.
Then, well, he, like, accidentally tells her. But then the thing that really killed me is that after Sandra Oh beats the ever-loving shit out of Jack, he still goes, I don't know how she found out.
Oh honestly, that didn't bother me that much. Because Jack is a piece of shit anyway. Like, does he deserve the truth?
I don't know. Yeah. Even then, though, I was like, wow, like, you will literally lie to everyone.
This
you will lie
really
to women. You will lie to your best friend. You will lie to your ex-wife. Like, everything.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, this movie made me realize that, like, men just need to communicate to each other more. Like, if you're going on a night out and you want to get laid, just tell your friends that and they'll support you. But don't tell them in the middle of the night, yo, I'm going home with this girl. Go home alone. Bye. See you tomorrow. Like, just be on the same page about what you want and your expectations. Girls are so supportive of their female friends when they want to get laid and go out. Like,
I did
just set the expectation.
I did feel kind of bad for Miles when he was like, we were supposed to go golfing tomorrow.
Yeah, like, if
I would be pissed.
If I was out on a girls' trip and somebody was like, oh, I'm going to go hook up with this guy, see you guys later, I would kind of be annoyed unless we went in tonight being like, we're getting Kate laid tonight, and then Kate...
That never happened.
I'm using Kate as an example because it would never happen. And if Kate met a guy and left, like, I wouldn't be mad because that was the expectation, you know, that was communicated. Just communicate, just talk to your friends about what you want.
When Kate
If I had a tea time the next morning, I would be... livid.
When Kate goes out, it's more like, let's get Kate in bed home by 10 o'clock, because that's what she wants. And I'm like, yeah,
but in bed with who?
By myself, hugging my stuffed animals so I can get a restful 8 hours. Thank you.
I was gonna ask, did either of you see American Fiction?
I did not.
Okay. I mean, I think, like, obviously very different film from this, right? And I think a better film than this. But I do think there were, like, some interesting similarities, almost, between the two main characters, between those films. Obviously, like,
and they're both authors.
They're both
one's
authors.
One's published, but right, the other is not.
One's, yes, but they're both, I would say, struggling, right? Like, at the points where they are at, they're both struggling to get their next book published. So in that sense, I really felt for Paul Giamatti, right? Like, I'm sure it was not in the cards for him to be teaching middle school English. Just like, what's his face? What's his character's name? Why can't... Oh, Monk. Just like Monk in American Fiction, like, clearly is not happy as a professor. And especially, like, as authors, like, that's all they... I feel like, first and foremost, they just care about their work and they want people to understand their work and see the vision instead of like actually, you know, how well does it sell or, you know, things of that nature. So that's why I really liked the ending of like her calling and saying, okay, like, I wanted to wait until I finished reading the book.
But do you think his book is actually good? It gets going at 750 pages in. It's like a 1,000-page book.
Disgusting.
Do I think his book is good? Probably not. Especially like the way he described it, which I thought was hilarious.
The day after yesterday.
Of like
you
going
mean
in
today.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but just like how he described it going in like 17 different directions, and he's like, then it circles back around. And but no, I felt for him like in that sense, like. He wanted somebody to get it. He wanted somebody to appreciate his book. And also, like, Jack was being a shitty friend going around telling everybody that it was getting published when it wasn't. And you could tell how much that meant to Miles, how often he was, like, calling and asking for updates and then has that moment of catharsis where he just drinks a whole fucking vat of red wine and pours it all over his face. So in that regard, I did really like the ending that she called and had all of those questions and thoughts about it.
Do you think so that the movie actually ends with Miles showing up to Maya's door?
Her door.
What do we think happens after that? I like the ambiguity of the ending. I would have liked it even better, honestly, if he didn't go straight to her, because, again, I'm happy he leaves this toxic life. I'm happy he's making changes in the right direction. I still do not think Miles deserves, or Maya deserves Miles, like, or Miles deserves, whoever, Maya is too good for Miles. And after everything that happened, I would hate to actually see Miles get the girl at the end of the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I think the fact that, you know, Maya called and reached out, even though the ending is ambiguous, like you said, I think the door is left open on a slightly more positive leaning note. So if I had to guess, I do think they end up together or at least try it out. I don't know, you know, how successful it will be. But it's also funny just because like the whole time watching this film, Maya, who's played by Virginia Madsen, the only other thing that I really know her from is a short character arc she had in Frasier, which is one of my all-time favorite shows. And, like, so I'm, you know, the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, oh, it's Cassandra. Like, it's her. and it's also funny because Frasier is also a wine snob. So she has a type. so that's all I could see. And, you know, their relationship does not work out. So maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
Well, there's a sequel novel. So the Sideways is based off of a novel also called Sideways. The author of the novel self-published his sequel. I think it's called Vertical.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Hilarious.
It's also hilarious that it was self-published post-Miles being able to get published. But anyway, this is straight from Wikipedia that I'm going to read. The novel takes place 7 years after the events depicted in Sideways. It contains the same characters as in the earlier novel. Miles, a writer, his friend Jack, and sometimes actor, and Miles' mother, Phyllis, all wine lovers. So I guess Miles' mother gets back into the picture. That makes me happy.
I mean, Miles, my God, they just, like, abandoned her in the morning, which is crazy.
I know.
It was genuine. Like, that broke my heart more than anything else in the movie. Yeah. Like, it's her birthday.
I know.
And they
it's
leave.
So bad.
Anyway, it looks like they made up. Miles is now a successful author, having written a novel called Shameless, which much of the same situations of the real life Sideways. Like Sideways, Shameless has been adapted into a successful movie. Jack, who has been prosperous in Sideways, is now divorced and short of cash. Pickett says that the character Jack is based off his real friend. I hate this.
That feels like a self-insert for the author.
Miles should not become a successful author. Like, I personally think that, at least Alexander Payne does not think that Miles is a good writer, with the fact that he has these two huge books that he can get nobody to read. And so the whole, like, and then he becomes a successful author and he makes up with his mother. Like, it's way too glossy for
me. So this makes me feel like that author of the book Sideways is self-inserting himself as Miles in a way. Also, I've just, like, I'm doing research for this movie. I've just noticed that this author, I think, really, really wants Sideways, like, to do more. Like, apparently he wrote a third book
and they're considering a
musical.
Yes.
He wants to do a musical, which like actually
I would watch a Sideways
got
musical.
Traction. It actually got traction on Broadway, like, and they actually had like started developing it and everything and had someone who's going to write the book and write the, and then it COVID happened, so it got pushed.
The author was also really mad at the changes they made to Sandra Oh's character in Sideways. I don't remember the specifics, but he basically intentionally did not put Sandra Oh's character in the sequel book so she wouldn't come back. So I have a lot of beef with this author, basically.
It just seems like, from what I've read about him, is that he's just, like, really trying to bank off of... like, apparently he's tried to get Alexander Payne to consider a sequel movie, and Alexander Payne's been like, never... And I don't think the author really liked that. And he's just trying whatever he can to keep it going.
The movie did still have great effects on, like, all of Solving and Wine Country. The Hitching Post, where they go to eat, like, was super popular after this movie came out. Hold on, let me...
There are literal, like, guides. Like, if you go onto, like, these, like, websites for, like, Santa Barbara and everything, there are literal... web pages that should say, oh, you want to follow the journey of Sideways? Yeah, like, here's every single place you should go.
It's like going on the hike to Mordor, except follow along Sideways in Wine Country. That's hilarious.
Which is great. I mean, like, if there's one thing I like about this movie, it probably helped those people up there boost tourism so much, and I'm really happy for them.
Here's a quote from here's a quote from one of the chefs at the Hitching Post. I don't know who exactly at the Hitching Post is, but after the 10-year anniversary of Sideways, they gave a quote that said, our wine sales doubled and the restaurant revenue quadrupled, and we were able to get an air conditioner. Thank you, Alexander.
Oh,
it's the owner, Frank Ostini, who said this. I'm glad they got an air conditioner. Damn, it must have been hot before that. God.
I read that, that a couple of the actors got food poisoning.
Food poisoning. I read that
because they were drinking fake wine.
No,
also.
I read that it happened at the mother's house.
Yes. The mother's meal gave them all food poisoning. But even, like, they were getting sick because obviously, unfortunately, they could not be drinking real wine. So they're drinking, like, a grape juice concoction that was making them ill.
This is the controversy that I read. So Thomas Hayden Church, the guy who plays Jack, has said in interviews before, oh, yeah, we all drank grape juice, like, 95% of the time. We were usually not drinking alcohol. But then Paul Giamatti has literally said, like, no, we were drinking alcohol. And he said, this is a quote that he gave to the website Shortlist. And he said, he said, in Sideways, we actually had to drink real wine because you couldn't fake the way it looked in the glass. The wine legs, I think they're called. It just wouldn't have looked right unless we used the real thing. There was one dinner scene where I had to drink a shitload, and by the end of the night, I was completely hammered. Fortunately, I didn't have to do that much talking, but I got really fucked up. It was great. You can tell that I'm kind of messed up. Maybe that's why the Academy didn't nominate me for that movie, because I'm clearly drunk.
I mean, let's talk about the Oscars. Giamatti was very snubbed in this, which was wild because he was nominated for all the precursor awards, SAG, Golden Globe, BAFTA, Indie Spirit Awards. It seems like the late run of Million Dollar Baby made Clint Eastwood come in and take what would have been Paul Giamatti's lead actor slot. Alexander still won for writing screenplay, for adapted screenplay for Sideways. And fun fact, original screenplay went to another Chaos on the Set contender that year, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Good movie.
We've covered both screenplay winners from 2005. We're really doing the work over here.
I will say, right, I do feel for Paul Giamatti not getting the best actor nom, but just like looking at the face of it, the names and the films, like in retrospect, I not really paying attention to the Oscars in 2005 because I was 9 years old, but like looking at it now, like it's not, I guess
I can name the nominees.
That's surprising.
It's Jamie Foxx, who won for Ray, and then Don Cheadle for Hotel Rwanda, Johnny Depp for Finding Neverland, Leo for The Aviator, and then Clint Eastwood for Million Dollar Baby.
And I know you said like Clint Eastwood, the late breaking, you know, Million Dollar Baby being the one to sort of steal it away from him, but also like Million Dollar Baby dominated the Oscars that year, right? It won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Supporting Actor. Like, if anything, Clint Eastwood was probably a surprising loss. But when you have somebody like Jamie Foxx, who's acting in a biopic, which, you know, of a famous person, Ray Charles. Like, biopics particularly do well at the Oscars. Honestly, I think if I had to choose somebody to replace in sub in Paul Giamatti, it'd probably be Johnny Depp in Finding Neverland. But yeah,
that one feels like a strange one for me.
But nonetheless, obviously shocking when the lead of a film doesn't get nominated. But
and all like supporting actor, supporting actress, writing, picture, like it got everything else. So that does kind of hurt. How do we feel about Giamatti's chances this year? Or let me rephrase that question: if Cillian Murphy was not in the race, do you think Paul Giamatti would have a choice this
year? Is Cillian Murphy a shoo-in?
Is winning.
Yeah.
Did Paul Giamatti win a Golden Globe for Holdovers?
I don't think so. Who won the Golden Globe?
So all he did was, he didn't win, but he went to In-N-Out, right?
He won. I thought he won.
I thought he won, and I thought, like, that's why it was
he
funny.
Went to In-N-Out with the trophy.
That's what I thought. Yes.
Oh, wait. Did he?
Oh, for a musical or comedy. Okay.
Yes. They're in different categories.
Yes. Paul Giamatti won for best performance by a male actor. But, okay, this was at the Golden Globes where he's up against Nicolas Cage for Dream Scenario, Timothy Chalamet for Wonka, Matt Damon for Air, Joaquin Phoenix for Beau is Afraid, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. Jeffrey Wright is the only one he's actually up against for the Oscar. So,
yeah. So, obviously, you know, that's why the Golden Globes are wonky, because they separate it between drama and comedy, and then half the films they fucking nominate for comedy like really aren't comedies. That being said, I do think if Cillian Murphy wasn't in this year, Paul Giamatti would stand a very good chance of winning. Would certainly be, I think, a top two contender.
I was happy to smear campaign against Cillian. No, I'm kidding.
I was happy to see him get nominated. I was really happy to see him get nominated.
I love him. And, like, I was also reading about, like, when he got, after he did Sideways, I don't have the exact quote on me, but he was saying how, like, oh, yeah, like, this was my first time ever doing, like, a romantic, like, actually working romantically with another actor. Like, I'd never done that before. And I was like, Paul Giamatti, you never got to be, like, a romantic lead. That's so sad.
He's usually terrorizing children.
Yeah, he's usually stealing children's screenplays. Yeah.
We will be covering Big Fat Liar on the podcast. Don't you worry. One of the most famous parts of this movie is Paul Giamatti screaming, if they want to drink Merlot, I'm leaving. I'm not drinking no fucking Merlot. And so after this movie came out, Merlot sales actually plummeted. Something else that's interesting that Jack taught me is that because there was so pro Pinot, the demand for Pinot grapes went up. But because Pinot grapes are actually so difficult to grow, they weren't growing as high quality Pinot grapes to fulfill the demand. So the quality of Pinot actually went down after the movie because the demand was going up. Meanwhile, sales for Merlot went down. I think it's hilarious that it had that huge of an effect on the wine industry.
Which then, because the sales for Merlot went down, the quality of Merlot went up.
Is that true?
That's what I read.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that far.
Yeah, I read that because of the demand for Merlot went down, that it was like a great value wine, that you could find very good bottles of Merlot for a cheaper price than you normally would. I don't know if like the actual quality across the board increased, but I think the value did.
Maybe I misquoted. It just said, some people even suggest that the hit Merlot took has turned the varietal into a great value wine. Yeah, that's like exactly what you said.
Well, let's play Jack talking more about Merlot.
The expert.
Honestly, I've never been a big Merlot drinker. There's a lot of really shitty Merlot out there. But there's also a lot of really good Merlot made in certain regions. I guess you can say that about a lot of wine, to be honest, but I just find myself going for varietals other than Merlot most of the time. It's funny because the movie really had a negative impact on Merlot sales in the United States, while Pinot Noir sales actually benefited from it. And it's hilarious to me that by Miles famously saying he's leaving if anybody orders Merlot, so many people were turned off by the grape what seems like forever. The genius irony in the movie that I'm sure a lot of people missed is that Miles' most prized bottle, which he drinks at the very end, 1961 Cheval Blanc, is actually a blend of Merlot and Cabernet Franc.
That is amazing. And can I also say, my biggest bone to pick with Miles this entire film, for all of his insidiousness, is when he absolutely slanders Cabernet Franc at the tasting, which I think is a very good varietal, one of my favorites. When
I mean,
comes
it's something
I
didn't pick up on. I wonder if Alexander Payne. I'm assuming he did it intentionally. He must have. But it's this man that is so depressed and shunning everything and unable to accept any of this quality, whatever, when his most prized possession is two things that he is claiming to detest. I think it's very interesting. I'm so glad Jack gave us that insight.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. This is the first I'm hearing of it. Like shocking, honestly, that it. That's the case. Like, I didn't see that in any, like, fun facts about the film. That's why it's great to know a wine guy. He can tell you these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, gotta get a wine guy. Every, you know, even when we're not covering wine movies, let's just get a wine expert yeah. on every podcast. Let's wrap things up there. We'll all go treat ourselves to a bottle of drink of our choice. In the meantime, Mike, do you care to tell folks where they can find you online?
Yes, you can follow me on Letterboxd at M. Riccardi. And I'm not going to share my Twitter today because Kate's here.
What? I'm here like all the time.
All the time. Oh. Okay.
It's not my fault that you guys want to do Lost, knowing that I can't watch Lost because people get, like, beheaded in that show.
Nobody,
I'm sorry.
Nobody, oh, sorry, spoilers, Mike, but nobody gets beheaded in Lost.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
they just get executed.
You can find me. They get executed?
One person got executed.
I don't want to watch it then.
A couple anyway, people got executed, but okay.
You can find me on Twitter, I guess X, at K_.
No, we're not calling it that.
At K_Wyatt. And I do have a letterbox, which I regularly update. I even put a review on there a couple weeks ago. Fun. But I can't share it with you because Mike said if I did, he would take the spit bucket at the winery and he would dump it all over my head.
Can we talk also about how they crashed Miles' car for no reason? They were so mean to Miles. Anyway.
Hey, it was
you can
believable.
Follow me on I think they could have just said they could have gotten beat up at the golf course by those guys that were already giving them shit. But anyway. Mm. That was the lie I would go with. I am on Twitter at MicroMarate. You can find me on Letterboxd at Shruti Marate. And then you can follow the podcast on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Instagram. We are all at Chaos on the Set. And you can also shoot us an email if you'd like, chaosonthesetpod@gmail.com. Coming up, we've got Lost Season 4 to cover. We'll be breaking down the Oscar predictions and so much more. If you have anything specifically you want us to cover, you can even email us that. Again, that's chaosonthesetpod@gmail.com.